It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hey everyone, welcome to From the Kitchen Table. I'm your host, Sean Duffy, along with my co-host for the podcast, but also my partner in life, Rachel Campos Duffy.
Thank you, Sean. It's so good to be back at our kitchen table. And boy, you know, you and I are in the news business, and it's been a really heavy couple of weeks, both with what's happening in the world. I mean, everything's continuing, I think, to devolve in Ukraine. We have the crisis at the border. Of course, I was just in Uvalde, and shortly after I returned, this horrific news of what happened in the school shooting.
And, so tragic.
And this week, all the funerals. And so
and we just... We have inflation. We have gas prices. Yeah,
people are being thrown into poverty.
We have a baby formula shortage. We're now talking about a food shortage coming in August or September of this year. A lot of things are happening.
Can I just say one thing too, Sean? Not to add on to the pile of negative, but I just read an article about because of the war in Ukraine and the global food shortages that are being caused by that, 49 million people, almost 50 million people are right now on the verge of entering into famine, starvation. So the repercussions globally are horrific. And yet life continues, right?
That's right. And that's why in this podcast, you know, again, these are a lot of Joe Biden's mistakes that have brought us to this point. And that's why we don't want to focus on the negative today. We want to actually focus on something different, something
with a little escapism, right?
A little lighter heart, and which is why we want to talk about a couple of things that we've watched recently. And we just took the family, we took all the kids, Rachel and myself all went to see Top Gun. So we want to talk about Top Gun Maverick, the second coming of Maverick.
Yes.
And then we want to talk about one of our favorite binge watching sessions, which is This Is Us.
Which had its final, the sixth season was on, and it just the last episode dropped last week. We just finished it last night.
Last night, that's right.
We were savoring it till the very end. So we're going to talk about This Is Us, but we're going to start with Top Gun because, Sean, you were pretty excited about Top Gun, I think, about a year ago. First of all, you got fired up when you found out they were going to take the Taiwan logo off the jacket.
Well, first of all, let me say I was excited about seeing Top Gun come, and it was supposed to, I think it was supposed to come last year.
Yeah.
Be released, but because of COVID, they've kicked it back to this Memorial Day. And just as a side note, everyone, when I was in Congress, the Wisconsin Air National Guard, which basically covers, you know, from Michigan all the way over to Minnesota, maybe even North Dakota, the northern border. Our air wing in Wisconsin covers that, and we have F-16s. And as a member of Congress, I was able to take a trip, a flight in one of those F-16s with my flight suit.
Yeah,
I had
you were pretty hot in that, and you were pretending like you were Top Gun.
Well, I kind of was really pretending, and maybe I wasn't pretending. Maybe it actually was a little Top Gun, but it was one of the, as a member of Congress, one of the coolest experiences that I had.
I don't think there's anything you were more excited about having done as a member of Congress.
It was thrilling. And just one side note, as I talked to the guys, by the way, they were F-16s when I flew, but now we have F-35s in that airbase, which is pretty cool. That's the new version, the new jet. They were saying the planes that we're flying right now to cover this part of the country, they were in essence made when Top Gun was made. The planes were that old. Now the technology, the radar, the firing systems, that had all been upgraded, but the equipment itself was made 30 plus years ago. And again, I think for me, it really resonated that if we're going to be a top-notch military, we have to continue to invest in military spending to make sure that, you know, we have the armaments, the equipment, and the manpower to defend America against any threat that may come, whether it's terrorists, China, Russia, anybody. And to see that that's the equipment that we were still using, basically a kickback to Ronald Reagan, meant that, you know what, we do have to be smart about how we're spending our dollars, but make sure we're investing
all right
in our defense.
Listen, Sean, I know you're a congressman former congressman. You want to talk about that, but everybody else really wants to hear about
Donald Trump. I apologize. Support military funding.
Support military funding. That was a long way to say support military funding. What we really want to support is this movie, because you really love this movie. I have to say, Sean, I loved the original better. And but I really respect the fact that on the sequel, they stayed with the storyline. They continued the Goose Maverick storyline with Goose's son. And they really paid homage to a lot of the great moments, the music, the unabashed, you know, unrepentant masculinity that was on display there. There was that famous scene on the beach in the original where they're all shirtless and oiled up and playing volleyball. And so they kind of recreated that in the second version, but now they're playing football. I just felt like they respected what was great about the original. They updated it, obviously, for this audience. And the storyline, the romance wasn't as sexy as the first movie. And this time, you know, it's a little bit more of a midlife romance.
It wasn't. Thank God for that, because we brought the kids to the movie. And I'm like, is that scene started with the romance? I'm like, oh, shoot. Well, and it did not get as hot as
it didn't get as hot and steamy as
again,
the first one.
And he's an older fighter pilot. So, right. It was a more appropriate love affair than, you know, 33-year-old Tom Cruise in the first Top Gun. But you bring up an interesting point, because I loved the movie because, one, there was unabashed patriotism in the movie. There was unabashed masculinity in the movie. And I mean, that men can sweat, that men can, as the liberals would say, have toxic masculinity, that they can actually puff their chests out and have sharp words and jive and jazz each other and razz each other about who's better, who's the best. I think
is
all
that what
of
guys
that,
do in the locker room? They really
100%
do.
We do. And you know what? That's men. That's what we do. And it's not toxic. It's just masculinity. And you want that masculinity, you know, in a military, which, by the way, it was the strength of the U.S. military as well that we were showcasing. You want that to have men who are willing to defend their country and their freedom and their women.
Yeah.
Sorry, can I say
that?
Well,
yeah, you can say that. You know, actually, the enemies in this mission that they're on in Maverick, in the second one, I thought they were the Chinese. I also thought it was interesting that they didn't specify that they were the Chinese.
Well, in the first one, they didn't either.
That's true. They didn't specify that it was the Russians. We assumed it. So I think that those are interesting takes. Obviously, these movie studios make these decisions because they want to go international. Look here, the film has broken records, at least for Tom Cruise. He's never had an opening weekend this big. I think it's now like $160-170 million weekend that on the first weekend. And this is going to continue to grow. Obviously it's going to, you know, people are going to go this weekend. I know people who are going 2-3 times to see the movie. They loved it so much. And then it's going to go international. So very, very, I think very significant numbers that show that there is an appetite for the things that you talk about: masculinity, patriotism, just sort of old Hollywood too. I mean, there's something about Tom Cruise, and I read this great article on Breitbart about it, that Tom Cruise really understands stardom, that he is, it's not just that he seems to never age. He looks amazing in the film, by the way. He is in incredible shape. He does do the shirtless scene as well with all these young guns. By the way, I'm going to talk about the training that went in before the football scene, because that was kind of funny how the actors really took that seriously from a training point of view. But it's not just that Tom Cruise is gorgeous and in shape. It's also that Tom Cruise understands stardom in the way that, you know, John Wayne understands, or they said Betty Davis understood it, or Paul Newman, who's my favorite old time, you know, old Hollywood movie star. So he understands that it's not about him. It's about the audience, that you want to razzle and dazzle them. And I think that's why Tom Cruise takes, you know, his stunt so seriously. He's fully committed when he does these films. And I think there was a lot of emotional range from him as well, Sean.
Yeah, no, I thought so. Thought so too. And just on the emotional range front,
Did you cry, Sean? Because Sean cries a lot.
I'm a crier. We're going to talk about crying in a second topic.
Is that manly?
Yeah. Well, sometimes not. Let's not go there. But what I think is interesting is the relationship. They brought back Val Kilmer, Iceman.
Oh, yeah. Right? That made you sad. Yeah.
And I believe that I read an article too where Ice Man or Val Kilmer, they weren't going to, they had him in the movie, but he was not going to actually be in it. It was going to be referencing Iceman, but he actually had lobbied and petitioned.
They probably didn't want him in because they thought that, you know, maybe because he had throat cancer, right?
Yeah, he's sick. But they put him in, he actually got a scene in the movie, which I thought was really great.
He lobbied for it.
He did. And what the part of it is, here you had these young men in the first movie who are wildly competitive, almost hated each other, but they're on the same team. And that was the crux of the Top Gun story in the first version. In the second version here, he is the fleet commander for the Pacific, ISIS. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Maverick hasn't been forced to retire yet, that Maverick keeps getting posts, even though he's a badass, that he continues to break rules, but continues to stay in the Navy and fly and get great assignments, is because ICE, who is the top commander, keeps giving him posts and believing in him. And so the evolution of their relationship and the friendship, I thought was really touching and a great storyline of, again, how we can be really hard competitors, but then also become really good friends with people. It happens all the time in life.
It does. It does. It was, you know, remember at the end of the first movie, he says, Maverick, you can be my wingman anytime. Is that what he says at the end or something like that?
You can be mine.
Yeah, that's right. He goes, no, you can be mine. And here they are. But also I have to tell you, because just not to be really superficial. And I did love that scene, by the way, when Iceman and Maverick are together in the second movie. But boy, I mean, you really see how well Tom Cruise aged compared to, obviously, Val Kilmer has throat cancer, but I still think whatever Tom Cruise is doing, it's an advertisement for Scientology. Maybe, man, I don't know,
Let's not go there.
I don't know what he's doing. It's like, is he putting his face in ice every morning? Is he like, does he eat no fat? What is going on with Tom Cruise? Cause he is just ageless. It's incredible. He looks as good as any of those young men that were in the film.
Well, I think, listen, I don't know what it is, but I think if people eat less and eat better and actually work out, you can do a pretty good job in how you age. Pretty simple stuff. But I want to go back to this point when you talk about Hollywood. Hollywood has become so woke, and they're pushing all of these movies with these progressive liberal themes that America doesn't really want. And so here you had Top Gun, and again, it had a big box office opening because it is the second Top Gun. So that is part of it. But the themes of the movie are able to get me off my couch, which I don't know the last time that you and I went to a movie. It's been forever.
Yeah.
But I was willing to give a movie theater my money with my popcorn. So we decided, you know what, we're going to go and support a movie with these kind of themes in it. And again, we took the whole, this is a side note. We took the whole family, as we mentioned. It wasn't cheap. I think we spent almost $200 when I got my tickets and popcorn.
Oh my God,
and soda for the kids. I nearly wanted to throw up. That's why we don't watch it at home.
And then I have this great photo at the end of the movie of our little son, because you know the theaters have the chairs that recline all the way back, and there's Patrick. He fell asleep, fully reclined, sleeping. Sean had to carry him out. And Valentina fell asleep just right after all the trailers and commercials, and she fell asleep just in time so we could watch the movie. So, but listen, it was a great film. I think that, again, it's bringing back, it may send a message to Hollywood that, listen, just entertain us. You don't have to wokeify us and stop making movies for the Chinese. Just make movies for America. If the Chinese like it, great. But you know, I thought that Top Gun was Americana on display, American strength, American exceptionalism. Can I mention one other thing that was interesting about it too for me was, you know, I think there's a nostalgia for the 80s. I think the 80s were a simpler time. I mean, we think about all the bad news that happened this week, these past weeks. I mean, these are things, school shootings and whatnot, are things that we never worried about when we were kids, Sean. We never thought about those things. It was a simpler time. Our enemies were very clear. Our enemies were, you know, the communists, the Soviet Union. And we never worried that Reagan was, you know, colluding or in any way compromised with the Russians. We worry about that now with Joe Biden and China, and Hunter Biden's laptop and everything else. And all of our elites are in some way compromised. Even Hollywood is compromised to the Chinese. And that's why this film was so remarkable to me, in that, you know, in the end, they decided to put the patch back on, the Taiwan patch back on. They saw the backlash from American people, and they made a film for American moviegoers. If the world likes it, great. But in the end, it was for us.
And, you know, I look at the 80s, and no one was trying to push CRT on us as kids. No one was pushing transgender, you know, issues on kids. We were able to just be kids and learn math and science and English. And after school, we would play a pickup game. I know in my neighborhood, pickup game of baseball or football. In the winter, we would all go skate.
You weren't on your cell phone all day?
Right. It was a simple time where kids could be kids. And I think you're right. It is a throwback to that. In regard to Hollywood, my hope is that they're in the business of making money. And the business of making money means make movies that Americans want to see. You're not in the business of trying to, you know, to send social messages through your movies to America. Make movies that make money. And I love that. And I heard
entertain.
I heard that the Chinese were not going to allow Top Gun Maverick into their theaters because it's too unabashedly American, with American patriotism. And if you make a movie that China won't let into China, you've done your job.
Yeah.
Thank you, Hollywood. Thank you, Tom Cruise, for making a movie that China says, no, it's too American. We won't let it in. And yeah, you might have left some money on the table, but you know what? You did something great at a time when I think America needed a movie like this. You did it and you released it at a time when I don't think a country could need it more than right now.
Yeah, there is a longing, I think, for patriotism, a longing for the 80s.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now let's go to another theme because we don't watch a lot of binge kind of shows. I don't sometimes. Because I don't have time. I loved Yellowstone. We watched Yellowstone together. And then I started watching This Is Us when it first came out, and I couldn't get Sean to watch. I kept telling him, I think this is the something you like. He didn't think he'd like it. And then he went on a trip and he said, you know, I'll try it out. And he tried it out. And so then I waited until Sean could catch up to where I was. And, you know, there's six seasons of This Is Us. And This Is Us, if you haven't seen it, is a drama, family drama, if you will, about three kids. Three siblings. One was adopted into the family. They're triplets because they're all born on the same day. And
hold on a second. So you, this is a story about a mom and a dad.
Oh yeah, you're right. You're right. And
she's going to have triplets, right? Three babies. One of the babies dies in delivery, and as that one dies, some other baby was abandoned.
That's right.
And she decides to adopt that baby and take her into the home. And so you have three kids again, and then you have two parents. And what I love about how they did this was they go back when the couple met, their meeting, when they had the kids, to when they're older. They're able to jump in time.
Yeah, back and forth,
which is a really unique way to tell a story. But I love this movie because
her show.
Movies. Thank you. The show. See, that's why Rachel's here. Like I had to say,
Actually laid out the story better than I did.
What I love is that it is all family. And you know what? The craziness of the Pearsons, which is the name of the family, it's complicated. It can be confusing, but you saw two parents who I think were inspiring. I watched it and I was inspired to be a better father. I was inspired to be a better husband. When I want to show, because the writing and the storylines of This Is Us, I thought were so awesome, so profound, and I think so moving. I absolutely loved it. And again, if you've dedicated yourself to family, this is a great family series of six seasons that, again, I think it can inspire people to be better.
Yeah. You know, I think it's really rare to see something that is so family oriented and really shows the primacy of the family. Family is central in the lives of all of these people, no matter what they're going through. In the end, they come back to family, and they come back to, you know, learning to appreciate what their parents had done for them and their sacrifices. I mean, I loved it. I loved the love story between Rebecca and
Jack.
I love that.
So those are the parents, mm-hmm. right? It was an amazing love story. But wasn't it interesting how they actually brought? I mean, this was very unpredictable, the storyline and how they.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to. For anyone who hasn't seen it and wants to see it, I I don't want to ruin any of the storylines, but I guess overall, love, marriage, family, I think are just absolutely on display and presented in a way that's very attractive, that makes people really, as you said, be inspired and want to create that for yourselves. And I also love the messiness of it. Listen, families are messy.
They're imperfect.
And they're imperfect. And there's lots of, you know, the more kids you have, the more drama there is. And, you know, here they had these triplets and just the ins and outs of their lives and how, and their fights and their makeups and all of it all together. I just thought, what a great storyline. Now, there were some things that you and I didn't like. And what happened towards the end, and I always thought it was a glaring absence, and it only became more prominent as the couple got older. And that is, there's zero religion in this, virtually zero religion in this series. And so, you know, you have this family that never goes to church, that never even references God. And you kind of could swallow it and take it and accept it, because certainly there are in America families like that. But here is where it gets really dicey towards the end. At one point, you know, the mother at the very end, the mother is the last parent to die. And it's this big moment. It's really the crescendo of the series. And it even, and actually to an extent, Sean, they were very honest about it. The kids felt very empty. And one of the older kids, adult children of the mother who's about to pass, you know, he says, this is all so pointless. What's the point? And of course it felt that way. It felt like, what is the point? Because there was never any reference to what comes next.
There's nothing. Once you're gone, you're dead.
It actually made me appreciate our faith so much more, Sean, because I don't believe it's over when we're dead. And I don't know if I could live if I thought it was over when we are dead. I was shocked at how depressing the end was.
So out of the six seasons, because they tell the storylines are so great, the writers are
incredible.
There's things that happen in one's life and in the storylines that it was an obvious gravitation towards faith. Towards, I'm going to go to church, or I'm going to pray, or I'm going to lean on this part of my
tragedy
life,
or
on
whatever
my creator
happened
in this really difficult time. And there was only one scene in the six seasons where, when I'd mentioned Jack and Rebecca are the parents, and she had the three babies, and one of them died. And Jack, the husband, at one point went into the chapel in the hospital, and there was a crossing of actually the adopted son's father who had dropped off the baby. They crossed paths in the chapel. That is the only reference in a chapel, one scene for about 20 seconds in the whole movie. And in the end, what was hard was they had a funeral for the mom. That's Rebecca. She was the last one to die. And in the service, they had pews as if it was in a church. But then if you look at the pulpit,
there was
nothing behind it. There was no cross. There was no crucifix. There was nothing to reference God or faith, or this is any kind of a religious ceremony. And I think that this was very intentional by the writers, because they're probably faithless people. And even in the last moments and how they bring you through Rebecca, the mom's death, and the things that she's seen in her own mind and throughout her life that brings her to her end, there was no reference to, again, God. There was no salvation. There was no afterlife. There was nothing else. It was going to be the end of everything for her. And that's what she experienced in the show, but also the kids experienced the exact same feeling. And I agree with you. It was so hopeless. It was so depressing, as opposed to in our faith, it's like, listen, I'm going to see you again.
Right.
One of us, I might go first. You might go first, but we're going to see each other again.
That's right. You know, it's funny because
we're going to be together again.
This week is the week of the Jubilee for the Queen of England. And I'm reminded of, she was asked about when Prince Philip passed, her husband. And she said, you know, obviously I'm really sad. There's a void in my life. I'm not going to pretend that I'm not sad, but I know I have hope. I know that I'm just passing through, and that my real home, I'm going back to my real home field, just got there first, right? And that's how I feel about this. And if I thought that when my mom did pass or my father passed, or if you passed before me, that this was it, I couldn't get through life. I mean, I couldn't live. I mean, I know in my heart, I know I'm not believing this because it gives me a good feeling to get through life. I honest to God in every fiber in my body believe that this is not my home. My home is somewhere else. And I'm going to be reunited with Jesus, and I'm going to be reunited with you, Sean, and all of our children. And you even think about, you know, what we first started talking about at the beginning of this, the tragedy in Uvalde. I mean, you cannot survive what happened to those parents knowing how their children died, especially the way they died. But the passing of a child in that horrific way with such evil, you cannot get through it unless you actually believe there's another life and that you're going to be reunited with this child and that there's a higher purpose for all of this happening. I don't know how you can live. You just want to open a hole in the ground and get in it and never get out. I've had several people in my life who have lost children, and my favorite picture I've ever seen, and one day I'm going to have to post it on my social media, is it's a picture of Jesus kneeling down, and he's like on a cloud, like, you know, you're clearly in heaven, and there's a little child, and the little child's running towards Jesus's loving arms, who's going to embrace him. That is the only way I could survive as a parent what just happened to those families in Uvalde. And I believe that with all my heart. And so, yes, This Is Us is a great film. A great series. I don't want to discourage anyone who hasn't watched it from watching it, because there's so much good to take from it. It's just so sad that there was nobody in Hollywood, any of those amazing writers, they couldn't bring themselves to inject a little bit of a Christian storyline. Remember, not everyone goes to church, but still 80-some% of Americans believe in God, believe in a higher purpose. I think it left, in the end, it left the viewers
a bit empty. So reiterate that. I just, like, the father of the family is Jack, and ends up, you know, passing away
tragically.
Yeah, but we see him throughout the whole series, because again, we mentioned this, you go up forward in time and back in time in the series. So he's part of the show still, though he's passed away, because we go back to when the kids were little. And an inspiring father. He's an inspiring husband. And the storylines around him are amazing. And Rebecca, the mom.
She's amazing too.
Amazing mom. And the storylines around these people is brilliant, the way Hollywood did it. And would I, because they missed the faith side of it, would I not watch the series again? No, I would still watch the series, because it was amazing. And so if we had Top Gun, but if you also want to look here and say, hey, this is another great family movie. And I want to be inspired. Series. Thank you. Watch it. And here's my test, though. Did the end of the show, as the final mother passes away, did you do your job? And I know you did your job if you make me cry. And if you don't make me cry, you're doing something wrong.
And it's not hard to make Sean cry.
It's not hard. Listen, I watched this stuff. Listen, I was just talking. I was about ready to cry when I was talking about those little kids in Uvalde. It's really hard stuff. And I think if you had brought in this other component that touches people in a different way, and especially people of faith, it's an easy place to cry and feel emotion, because you've kind of gone on this journey with this family.
Yeah.
But I felt a little bit empty in what could have been really emotional, because that side of it wasn't there. And you know what? When you're emotional about the end, I think you're emotional because it is the end of life, but it's also emotional because there's such love for you, and it's emotional because you're going to your loved one is going to a different place.
Yeah.
That you're going to be able to join them with. And someone came here and sacrificed for your salvation. That's all that when you're reminded of that, and when
Jesus,
you get to actually go home,
yeah,
that's right.
At the end of life,
you're touched, and it's an emotional, it's emotional. So
here's what I will say, though. And on the positive side of the death side of it. Right. So what I did sense is, you know, at the very end, Rebecca's laying in bed, and Jack, her husband who had died before, and, you know, as a mom, as a dad, you, Sean, I mean, that's all you really want. And at the end of life, they missed the religious component, but they did get the family component. At the end of life, what does it all come down to? It comes down to God, and it comes down to family. family, and they got the family part right. And at the very end, she was surrounded by all of her children. She passed in the way that we all want to end our life, and knowing that we did everything we could. I have a very good friend, Sean knows him. He's a cardiologist. So he sees a lot of people at the end of life. And one day I was talking to him and he said to me, I don't know what I probably asked him, you know, what do people talk about the most, you know, as they're, you know, passing, because he's with families a lot in those moments. And he said, you know, when people know that, you know, they're going to die, he said, the one thing I hear them say the most that they regret, and it's fascinating, a lot of people wonder what that would be. He said their one regret is not having had more children.
Interesting.
He said their one regret is that they didn't have more children. And I think that it is a lot of things. One, and also he said this to me. He said people who have family around them, lots of family around them, and children around them with families, he said they are much more, what was the word he used? They're much more calm as they're passing, that there is an agitation among people who are not surrounded by family, that there's something missing. And so I think it's very interesting because I think in this show, they captured that what is really important in life.
Well, we have another different friend who actually works in hospice. And I had this conversation with her, and she says that people of faith that know God, that know they're going to be saved, that know they're going somewhere else, and you know, after death, there's a peacefulness about them around their death. And those who don't have faith, that don't believe, there's agitation, there's stress, there's a lot of emotions that are everything that's contrary to peace around
death. It's the same thing that my doctor friends.
Yeah, the same thing. And what's interesting here is they were in this show. And again, we're talking about death because we just watched the last show
the show's not all about death. There's so much life.
This is the end of the sixth season. It's an awesome show, but we're talking about it because they were very peaceful around her death, but
they got the family part right.
The experience of others who are around people who don't have faith in those moments, it's not as peaceful because they don't have the peace of moving on to a better place. And so again, we want to talk about these two themes again, two things that we have watched, the movie Top Gun and this show, This Is Us. Again, a great TV series that you can actually get on Apple TV if you want to buy it. I'm not sure if it's anywhere else right now, but you can buy it on Apple TV.
This is us.
And check it out because again, you'll be inspired by the family stories and the kids and the parenting. It's a wonderful series. And
by the way, there's a scene at a wedding where the mom, who happens to be a singer in the show, she wrote a song and she sings this song. And apparently she actually did write the song with her real life husband. And that song made it to number one in Apple, you know, on the Apple, what do you call
it? What's Rebecca's name again? What's her real life?
Oh, that's Mandy Moore.
Mandy Moore. Yes.
Yeah. So her song made it to number one on the charts and on Apple Music. So, I mean, obviously people love the show. People were invested in it, waiting for season six, which they said is the final season. So it's not going to, there's not going to be a season seven. So you can watch it up to the very end. Great, great, great way to, you know what, Sean, it was really fun watching six seasons with you.
It was. You're a good six season series watcher with me. I love it.
Listen, but you know what? It's interesting. You know, we've been married 23 years and I always say opposites don't attract. I believe you should marry someone who really has the most in common with you as possible in terms of values. And it was interesting watching the end of this series because we both loved it so much all the way. And we both were disappointed at the end just because we share those values, family and God. And at the very end, that's what it all comes down to, right, Sean Dogg?
It really does. And I just want to make one point of clarification. I do watch more series than Rachel. So if I go work out in the basement, I don't listen to music, right? I turn on these series and I work out and watch different series as I work out throughout, you know, the week.
Yeah, so ones that I can't stand. I don't want to watch like Breaking Bad. I don't like all that negativity in my life.
All of you listening who watch Breaking Bad, you know how wrong she is, but that's fine. Because it's an awesome series. But listen, thanks for sitting in and having a little, this is supposed to be more lighthearted than maybe it ended up being.
we wanted to take everybody on a journey away from all the bad news cycles, but you know what?
We got sucked into the bad. to the negative.
But you know what? It's not negative what we brought up. I think in the end, we're talking about what life is really about and really focusing on the importance of and the primacy of God and family.
God, family, country, the three things we talked about in this TV show and in this movie.
Yeah. So and oiled up men on the beach playing sports. I love that too.
I know you do. I know you do.
All right. It's been great.
We'll talk about that after the podcast.
The oil shot up. Sure. Uh-huh. All right, everybody. Great talking with all of you guys around the kitchen table. If you love this podcast, go to where you can rate this podcast. I don't know all the rate review. I don't have my script in front of me.
Rachel's supposed to have a script in front of her to end this podcast that she doesn't have.
You end it, Sean.
I'm going to pull it up.
All right, fine. I'll close it out. We've enjoyed this conversation. If you did too, let us know. Subscribe, rate, and review this podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download your podcast. We look forward to being with all of you around the kitchen table.
That is real, Rachel.
That's real. That is not on script.
Can't wait to see you next
week. We look forward to seeing you next week around our kitchen table from the kitchen table. Bye, everybody.
Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.